AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. Energy prices are surging again. Crude oil is back up near the highs, and the U.S. is announcing new sanctions against Russia. Is the timing right? What does it mean for U.S. energy policy? And what does it mean for prices at the pump? But first, let's get briefed on the latest from Ukraine.
Live from the roiling seas of market volatility and international intrigue via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Senator Jerry Moran. Then it's Phil Flynn from the Price Futures Group. Right after the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Yeah, man, what a lineup. Senator Moran and Phil Flynn. We'll get the latest on what Ukrainian President Zelensky says that Ukraine needs from Senator Moran, whether or not the U.S. intends to provide any of the relief support.
Well, that's a good question right there, yeah.
Exactly, that Zelensky is asking for. I know that Senator Moran right now is pushing hard for some food aid from the U.S., so okay. we will get the latest on that as well. And then here we are, Davis, record gas prices at the pump, according to Gas Buddy, taking out the 2008 highs. Crazy, crazy. And crude oil futures right back up near the highs. So we are we're keeping an eye. The stories are developing as we speak. Let's put it that way. Okay,
yes,
Davis.
Yes, they really are. They really are.
No doubt.
It's time to manage risk in your personal gasoline usage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just keeping it topped off. Just stay topped off. You know.
And maybe the thing to do is let the price be cheaper twice on the fill-ups before you wait.
Yes. Oh, now that's make the market prove it.
Make
that's
the market prove
make
it.
Make the market prove it.
That's it, baby. That's it. That's what I'm saying. All right, man, let's get to the news. What do you got?
Well, Chip, global stock markets are wilting and the U.S. dollar is surging against other currencies as investors rush for the safety of U.S. assets. Economists are increasingly warning of a possible bout of stagflation, particularly in Europe. That's a situation of high inflation and low growth, Chip.
Yeah, it's a terrible situation to be in. Ask Japan. They were in it for, they're still in it for like 40 years. So it's that is a go-nowhere economic condition, and it is unbelievably difficult to bust out of.
Well, President Joe Biden will sign an executive order this week that will outline the U.S. government's strategy for cryptocurrencies. The order will direct federal agencies to examine potential regulatory changes, as well as the national security and economic impact of digital assets. The directive is also expected to address the possibility of a U.S.-issued central bank digital currency.
I still don't get it.
I don't either. I don't know. Well,
I'm trying.
We'll need to get more information here as we go along. Yep. U.S. small business optimism fell to its lowest level in more than a year, and a record share of owners raised prices in February as businesses coped with supply chain disruptions, labor shortages, and accelerating inflation. The National Federation of Independent Business Optimism Index dropped in January to the lowest level since January 2021. The share of owners raising average selling prices increased to a net 68%, the highest reading on record. Prices going up, Chip.
Yeah, one of the components of stagflation that you talked about earlier is
the
lack of optimism, of lack of investment in businesses, even as prices continue to go up. And that's exactly what we're seeing right there is your first symptom of stagflation.
You're picking up what I'm throwing down, brother. Congress is putting pressure on the Biden administration to ban Russian oil imports. This morning, a senior U.S. official said that would indeed occur. Chancellor Olaf Scholz of Germany said that he was reluctant to impose a ban given his country's dependence on Russian fuel. And despite joining in financial sanctions against Russia, Switzerland remains a hub for the trading of Russia's raw materials and resources. Shell said it will end purchases of Russian crude and will shut more of its operations in Russia as Western oil giants move to cut decades-long ties with Russia. News was to come out just a little bit ago. I haven't seen anything fresh. Chip, on your end?
He's 25 minutes late coming to the podium to announce the ban on Russian oil purchases.
Okay.
It's coming. It's coming. We will check in with Senator Moran on that as well.
Here, man, here's a little something for you. You're going to love this one. The okay. U.S. is reportedly considering lifting sanctions so Venezuela can get its oil flowing. But the reality is that the country's oil sector is ill-prepared to begin churning out more crude and lower fast-rising oil prices. Now, meanwhile, chief execs from some of the world's largest oil companies and U.S. government officials warned yesterday there were no quick-fix solutions to the higher energy prices and to the market volatility that have followed Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Well, we'll check in with Senator Moran on that, but I got a feeling he's not too fired up about turning to Venezuela for crude oil.
Ukraine and Russia have agreed on one evacuation route so Ukrainians can safely leave the region. Several previous attempts to evacuate civilians failed earlier this week, with Russian leaders or Western leaders accusing Russian forces of continuing to target pre-approved safe routes.
That's the brutality of what is happening. They're calling the ceasefire. They're saying, listen, you can get out of the country through on this road, and then they're bombing it.
Yes. And just real quickly here, I should note USDA has confirmed avian flu in a commercial turkey flock in Iowa. Chip.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Karen Bonert. She is the editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Good morning, Karen. How are you?
I'm good, Chip. How are you?
Doing just fine. Let's get some of the results of the poll that you've had up on DairyHerd.com. What do you got?
Yeah, well, obviously, every single day, dairy producers are faced with challenges. The poll's on DairyHerd.com, like you said. So the options were rising feed costs, labor shortages, supply chain issues, replacement costs, government state regulations, and other. So the results so far showed that 60% of producers are most concerned about rising feed costs, followed by labor and then supply chain issues. So I was surprised that labor didn't go higher, truthfully. But the more I thought about it, you know, Chip, producers have been dealing with this for a long time, right? So they've had to retweak their HR protocols and retention focus. But they're faced with that rising feed bill every single day. Every day as producers, we see that fuel price soar and know that the result will be increased freight, making our feed bill higher. So why milk futures show positivity, obviously that's needed. But that golden question is how much of that will be swallowed up by that rising feed bill? So I used to say that we could get by with $20 milk. Cost used to hover around $17.50 per hundredweight, and that gave us a cushion for future growth. And I asked Gary Sikorski yesterday, what is that new $20 milk price? And he says it'll take a while to figure that out, especially as costs continue to rise. So while $23 milk looks good, unfortunately, Chip, there won't be much left, especially after paying that ginormous feed bill.
Yeah, Karen, that is exactly right. I mean, I look at this market, and it looks great all the way out into the summer months with $24 Class 3 milk futures, but it's a margin game. It's just like everything else out there, and feed costs are biting into it. Good stuff, Karen. We can get more details on that at DairyHerd.com. Good stuff. Thanks, Karen.
Yep. Thanks, Chip.
All right. You bet. That's Karen Bonert, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. Okay. What is the latest from Ukraine? We're going to find out from Senator Jerry Moran next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by new Bond Silage Speed C, aerobically stable corn silage in 14 days. Learn more at bondsilageusa.com/speed. It's fast.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
The best talkers in ag, including you. Join the conversation on AgriTalk.
We'll do that again someday soon. For now, just hit us up on Twitter, hashtag AgriTalk, or send us an email, host@agritalk.com. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Floyd. Davis Michelson is standing by, sir. As is U.S. Senator Jerry Moran from Kansas. Senator Moran, welcome back to AgriTalk. How are you?
Chip, I'm fine. The world is a messy place, and I think we're all raised to say that we're fine when asked that question, but there's lots of challenges in the world, and Congress is a difficult place to work these days, but maybe we're making some progress on a few things, and I know we're going to talk about Ukraine and food and agriculture, but I also would highlight to you that today appears to be the day the Senate's going to pass a bill already passed by the House of Representatives, postal reform, something postal I've worked reform. On since I've come to Congress. Postal reform, trying to preserve and enhance the services available to Americans, particularly those in rural America, from the United States Post Office, and keep it from going down the bankruptcy path.
Right. Good. I mean, it's unbelievably important to rural America that we maintain our postal service, and this makes sure that it's going to be around for decades to come, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, it takes some modest but important steps in making the Postal Service more solvent, more financially stable. You know, we've been through a lot in rural America. I know in Kansas, the Postal Service a number of years ago had 120 post offices on the chopping block. We were successful in saving most of those, but with shorter hours. We've had processing plants closed by probably five or six. We're down to two in Kansas, one in Wichita, one in Kansas City. Our mail goes out of state before it comes back into state. Yeah. And I've had a conversation with every postmaster general since I've been in Congress saying you can't just cut services and expect the Postal Service to survive. If your only plan of financial solvency is to do away with the services that the post office provides, it isn't going to work. And could you listen to your postal employees instead of hiring multi-million dollar contracted consultants to tell you what to do. And so this is a long number of years effort to try to get the Postal Service back in better shape and to be available to all of Americans, but mostly to rural.
Excellent. Excellent. That's good news on the domestic front. Let's go international and global. What is the latest from Ukrainian President Zelensky? What do they need right now?
Well, Chip, I was on the call on Saturday morning with President Zelensky. Yeah. I would start by saying he was very grateful to America, to Americans. He certainly made clear that what we have done to date with sanctions and other kinds of assistance he is very grateful for, and the Ukrainian people are grateful for. But the requests, certainly the requests, something that we've been engaged in really for a long time, but certainly since the Ukrainian situation developed, let's eliminate the purchase of oil and petroleum products from Russia. How immoral it is to fund the endeavors that Russia is undertaking in Ukraine and risk American servicemen and women's lives who happen to be stationed in Europe. So that was a straightforward one. But the real request is a no-fly zone. Keep Russians out of the air. And that is something that this administration, and I think NATO, is very nervous about, although I see some breaking indications that maybe there's a growing belief that that's important or capable of being done. In the absence of that, the Ukrainian president's request was for MiGs, Soviet-era planes that are currently in Poland, to be shipped to Ukraine so that the Ukrainian pilots can use them to protect the Ukrainian people. And the Polish government is apparently willing to do that. Yeah. What's necessary is a commitment by the United States to backfill in case Russia exceeds Ukraine and keeps coming. The Poles don't want to be left behind without airplanes that they can utilize to defend their country.
that effectively would engage the U.S. in the conflict, wouldn't it?
Certainly the no-fly zone does. Providing planes to Poles, to the Polish people, to the Polish government, and letting the Polish government provide the planes they have, I think is a solution that is en route, that it is in the process of happening.
Really?
That one actually may occur. There is real concern that if we've got American pilots over Ukrainian skies and we encounter Russian pilots over Ukrainian skies and something happens, that is the beginning of something much, much, much concerning. And a challenge we have is that Ukraine is not the only place that we have to have our eyeballs on. Right. We cannot get bogged down in Ukraine not knowing what our adversary China might do on the other side of the world.
Right. And I assume that you're saying what China might do regarding Taiwan, correct?
Might do regarding Taiwan. Again, China is an adversary that has a long-term plan to, in my view, see the demise of the way we live our lives, the nature of what our country is. I hope that the Europeans, it is the Europeans who need to take the lead in Ukraine and allow the United States to be of assistance and help in that regard, yeah. But to make sure that we're not there when we need to be someplace else.
Right. Okay. President Biden is more than like 35 minutes late coming to the, getting close to 40 minutes late, coming to the podium to announce the ban on Russian oil. But I would assume his tardiness does not indicate that it's not going to happen. Is now the right time for this to happen?
It's probably past time, but it is the right time. I mean, we'd be happier if this was earlier. We don't import a lot of oil, but it does mean we were importing 770,000 barrels in 2021. Latest numbers that I have. And that money clearly is the way that the Russia finances its endeavors within its country and now outside its borders. So it's the right thing to do. And what's missing is the president will not announce, I assume, that he is doing everything he can, regulatory-wise, administration support-wise, to increase domestic production of oil and natural gas. That's the key to this. People are worried about the price at the pump. I'm worried about diesel fuel and fertilizer costs. And the solution to that is not just to announce we're not importing Russian oil, but to also say we're going to do everything we can to produce more oil, natural gas in the United States and to help our economy and the rest of the world meet its energy needs. And instead, the administration is talking to Venezuela. The question about buying more from Iran, buying oil from Iran. Our greatest, in a sense, challengers in regard to terrorism in the Middle East. Nothing is being said about whether or not we're going to increase our own production, which we can do. And the only thing I've seen that the president has said is that he supports increasing solar and wind power, something I support, but not the solution to this issue.
Yeah, it it's not like we can automatically flip a switch and the crude starts to flow from North Dakota again. It's going to take some time, but those oil companies, Senator, are going to need some long-term assurances that the administration is not going to come in and regulate them out of business if they do succeed in providing some short-term assistance in our energy situation here. What are the odds of that long-term assurance?
Well, long before Ukraine and this circumstance we're in today in the world, it has been an object of mine is to try to convince the administration that while we need good environmental sound policies, they have to be based upon common sense, and they can't destroy our national security or our economy. And the president, it just seems to me, to be unwilling to cross the environmental divide and say anything that would suggest we're going to import, that we're going to produce more. And in fact, the president encouraged Russia before the Ukrainian invasion to produce more to help us lower the price at the pump in the United States.
Right.
It's like, that's so hypocritical. It shows we're not really opposed to the use of oil. We're just opposed to the politics of suggesting we want to use oil.
Right.
From the United States.
Exactly right. Senator, we've only got a minute left. We got to move on to your call on Secretary Vilsack to prioritize using ag export assistance in the international food aid programs. What's that all about?
Well, the Ukraine and Russia are the exporters of wheat. They are a significant component of the world wheat market. They export about one-fourth of the wheat consumed. And I'm calling upon Secretary Vilsack to utilize our programs to get more American wheat and other ag commodities into world markets, because we are already have significant and serious famines around the world. And what's happening in Ukraine is only going, not only for the Ukrainian people who are now refugees, but for the rest of the world who've relied upon Russian and Ukrainian grains. We need to increase our opportunities to export and provide food assistance, both those that we get paid for and those that we donate.
Excellent. All right, Senator, the good news is President Biden is at the podium now, and it looks like he is making the announcement that you were looking for. Senator, thank you so much for your time. Very generous. Thank you.
Chip, half of the announcement I was looking for. Only half, I bet.
Only half. That's right. That's Senator Jerry Moran from Kansas. Phil Flint next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Let's go to the wheat market. All over the place this morning, Brian. Money flow, isn't it?
Absolutely. We've got that May SRW contract that had been locked limit for basically 3 days, and it's trading now. And as a result, the deferred contracts are under heavy pressure, as is the May SRW contract. So, everybody that wanted to trade and couldn't the past 2 days because it's been locked, and even back to a third day when it went limit up and locked very quickly, can now trade it. And we're seeing some profit taking and corrective selling in the marketplace this morning.
Yeah, absolutely. Look at the soy complex. Some solid gains happening there. What's going on?
Well, I think you need to look to the crude oil market, which is sharply higher. And obviously, the U.S. Is going to ban Russian oil imports. So that's having a direct impact on crude oil, obviously, and then somewhat of an indirect impact on soy oil, which is sharply higher. So helping the whole soy complex there with meal and soybeans trading higher as well.
All right. We've got some mixed trade, mostly lower trade in the corn market. But take us over to livestock. Lean hogs are catching a bid.
Yeah, absolutely. So some corrective trade there. The price performance, technical performance here recently has been kind of ugly, especially culminating yesterday, a little bit of a head and shoulders formation there on the daily chart. But trying to negate that this morning. And then we've got continuation of the corrective buying that happened in the cattle complex yesterday, with feeders leading us to the upside.
Yeah, so lots of action happening in these markets. Brian and I are going to talk about that this afternoon on AgriTalk as well. Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. The truth is hard to come by these days, unless you listen to AgriTalk.
Davis, was an enlightening conversation with Senator Jerry Moran from Kansas.
Yes.
If the U.S. decides to backstop Poland on those fighters, on the fighter jets, Mm-hmm. That is, I don't see any way that Russia would not view that as a significant escalation of the United States' role in what is happening in Ukraine. Great concern will be developing from that. I don't think there's any question. Wow. Okay. This is incredible timing. Phil Flynn, energy analyst at the Price Futures Group, is our guest right now. Phil, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, man. Here I am looking at the TV, and President Biden is at the podium, mm-hmm. announcing a ban on Russian oil purchases. Right thing to do?
I think morally it is the right thing to do. We've got to do something to send a message to Vladimir Putin. You know, we don't want your blood oil. We don't want your blood money. And, you know, we have to do that. And, you know, he's right. The American people, there was a poll by Reuters that showed that 80% of Americans, you know, whether they're Democrat or Republican, think it's the right thing to do. You know, I hope they take the same poll a couple weeks from now, because they're going to pay for it at the gas pump. Right.
Right.
But definitely, I think you've got to put the screws to Vladimir Putin. We can cut them off here in the United States. In Europe, it's not going to be that easy, because they basically sold their soul to the devil, you know, and the devil is, it's the devil's playground right now when it comes to energy security in Europe.
Phil, can I ask you, what does that do to crude supply balances? We saw some pushback from the Chancellor of Germany on refusing Russian oil. Is there a chance that this could backfire in some way and actually add more supply and thereby lower European crude prices coming out of Russia for those who are willing to still participate in that market?
It could, and that's probably, you know, a good thing in a weird way, only because, you know, they don't have a lot of choices out there right now, right? Especially when it comes to gas, okay? You know, oil, you can flip around a little bit, you know, there's different qualities of oil, but when it comes to gas, they're 50% dependent on Russia. And so Russia is, you know, talking about the nuclear option, not just the real nuclear option, but nuclear option of cutting them off, and they don't have a replacement for supply. So, yeah, I mean, listen, Russia is, they have made a deal with Russia that they can't get out of, and there's not a lot of alternatives for them, and they know that. And because it's a question of buying oil and gas from Russia, or just, you know, turning off the lights and telling everybody try to stay warm.
Yeah,
right. I'm looking at Fox Business, the headlines rolling on Fox Business, where I see your face quite often, Phil.
Thank you.
And President Biden has said we need to become energy independent. I didn't hear what he was saying, but mm-hmm. I'm sure that the reference to solar power, to wind power, was all included in that, because the conversation of U.S. energy independence rarely starts with crude oil from Texas and North Dakota.
You're right. And I mean, the thing, I think what, you know, and again, I'm kind of watching it over, while I'm speaking to you and trying to read what he's saying. He said he made it clear, you know, obviously he's a green energy guy, but he was trying to take the data and say, listen, we have not been an anti-fossil fuel administration, right? You know, he was saying that, you know, oil leases have gone up dramatically under his administration. He was saying, hey, guess what? You know, oil production in my first year in office was, you know, up more than President Trump's first week in office, or first year in office, which is, in my opinion, totally misleading. You know, the reason why the oil leases were up is because he was going to put a ban on it in 30 days, and everybody and their brother bought every lease they possibly could, because they're afraid they couldn't get one 2 months from now, right? So that was the reason for that. You know, the reason why oil production came up faster under Biden than Trump was because of the low baseline. You know, we were coming back from a pandemic shutdown. And even then, oil production has failed to get back to pre-pandemic levels. And that is in part due to Joe Biden's policies. make no mistake about it, Joe Biden's policies has restricted U.S. energy production.
Right.
And he can point to every little, say, well, this data point or that data point. But I know people in the industry. I've got customers. Their banks close their accounts. Why? Pressure from the Biden administration to lower their carbon footprint. You've got the Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, telling the Federal Reserve that they need to go after businesses, looking at their carbon footprint and hold them responsible, right? So
Right. We've
had pension funds under pressure from the Biden administration saying, hey, we're not investing in fossil fuels anymore. What kind of message does that send to a capital-intensive business? It tells you, hey, the U.S. is not open for business, despite the administration's claims.
Phil, can I ask you this? You're an energy expert. It might sound like I'm being facetious, but if we're reaching out to Saudi Arabia and to other oil-producing nations, including Venezuela now, apparently, and still trying to maintain a green policy here, is it greener to produce oil in Venezuela or Saudi Arabia or Qatar, or have they got the formula figured out they can do it cleaner than us?
Absolutely not. You're absolutely
right. I didn't
think
so.
No. In fact, I think Venezuela and Saudi Arabia and these countries are some of the dirtiest producers in the world. The dirtiest producers in the world. Listen, I don't want to get too wonky about crude oil supplies and all this kind of stuff, but listen, the U.S. energy industry, when Texas started to run out of oil in the 50s and 60s, U.S. refiners built their refineries for cheap oil that was readily available from Venezuela. And their oil is a very thick, icky oil. Basically, to make a long story short, so, that's how we built our refining system. We can get it from Saudi Arabia. Well, when we put sanctions on Venezuela, we had to replace that heavy oil. We could get it from Canada, but Canada's already sending us about as much as they can. They could send us more if we opened up the Keystone Pipeline, but that's another argument. So the other country that produces that oil is Russia. So now, we've been importing record amounts of oil from Russia in the last year, to replace Venezuelan oil. So that's why there's such desperation by the administration to say, oh, boy, we're not going to get Russian oil. How can we get Venezuelan oil back? Let's cut a deal with Maduro. So it's crazy.
Okay. You've got one of the greatest imaginations when it comes to thinking forward on what the energy markets are going to be doing, Phil. What does this look like in a couple of weeks?
Not pretty. Listen, there are downside situations where we could get a little bit of price relief. If we lift sanctions on Venezuela, that's a good thing, but it's going to take them time to ramp up. Their energy industry is in a shambles. Okay. You could cut a deal with Iran, right? Does anybody really want to cut a deal with Iran? I mean, we're dealing with the devil we know and the devil we know, right?
And we know
they're both bad, right? So, I'm hearing, reports last week that, that the Biden administration was allowing Russia to make demands about this deal because they're negotiating for us. So this is the kind of crazy world we're living in. You got Russia on one hand, they're invading a sovereign nation, killing civilians. And on the other hand, they're negotiating for the United States with Iran to cut an oil deal. It's totally crazy, so. Listen, the bottom line is that I think that the Biden administration needs to take the shackles off of the U.S. energy industry for real, not just lip service, say, listen, guys, this is a national emergency. We're going to listen. We're all for green energy, all energy sources, but we're going to make the U.S. the biggest producer in the world by far. And we're going to put everybody else out of business because we do it cleaner than these dirty countries, and we're going to make sure for it. So
can't snap your fingers and go straight to the clean, green energy that the administration is dreaming about. There's got to be a transition plan, and they forgot about the transition plan in all this, Phil.
Yeah, they sure did. And the other thing they're forgetting about is get, you know, and this is one of the stories you're not going to hear a lot about. I don't know if you heard the story, nickel, it was widely reported. It exploded yesterday. They had to stop trading it. Well, guess what goes in electric cars? Nickel. Right? Yep. You know, so, you know, because of the rare earth mineral situation, you know, if we all go electric, these prices of these rare commodities are going to go through the freaking roof. Right. So you might not be able to afford an electric car, let alone be able to afford to charge it, because the price of electricity is going to be ridiculously high. You know, this is what happens when the government tries to force their way, you know, without thinking of the consequences. You know, let the markets work. Listen, we all know we need to get greener. We're moving in that direction anyway. The United States did it, by the way, without being part of the Paris Climate Accord and all that stuff. You know, let the markets do it. You know, businesses know they're, push them in the right direction and let them do their jobs.
Yeah, incentivize, don't penalize. And there's been too much penalty for the oil industry in this transition. We've got 30 seconds. Record high gas prices, going higher, right?
They are, yeah. And I'm afraid the only thing that'll stop them is when demand gets cut back. And I don't really want to see that, but I'm afraid we will, because that means vacations are going to get cut back, and you know, people's budgets are going to get cut back.
And when the budgets get cut back and the vacations get cut back, the economic activity in the country gets cut back.
Yeah.
Phil, we'll talk more later, but this feels like energy is ushering in a recession. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Bye-bye. Phil Flynn, energy analyst there at the Price Futures Group. Davis and I will be back to discuss.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
You suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem.
Wow.
Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
Sorry.
It's okay. It was the Twitter one. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. Don't call. We're not going to pick up that call. It's not because we don't want to. It's not because we don't want to hear from you. It's radio stuff that nobody... It goes back to my point. Nobody knows how radio works. It
nobody
just
really understands.
Does. Until it doesn't. It's like computers, you know? They're great until they don't work. And then, you know, what you've got is a giant paperweight. Davis Michelson here. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Thank you for tuning in, everyone. So glad you're with us. Wow. Senator Jerry Moran and then Phil Flynn. While energy is in such focus here, excellent, excellent, timely conversations there. Let me just throw in one thing, because I know that it was important for Senator Moran to bring this up. He's very proud of his work. I'm a letter writer.
I'm
an old school kind of guy.
Yeah.
I like to write letters. As it happens, I've got a white hot romance going on right now with a young lady who doesn't live in close proximity here.
Okay.
So part of the communication strategy is to, you know, send letters and parcels back and forth just a little bit. It's great fun. And it's fantastic that there's the postal service there. I walk the dog down, you know, a couple of blocks to the post office, drop in the letter. Everybody's happy. So fantastic. Okay. Glad that
the Postal Service is here to stay for a while.
I really am. I really am. Yeah. And we appreciate Senator Moran's efforts on that.
Yeah.
Dude, this energy policy is just making me crazy.
Everybody.
And I almost felt like, you know, I joke around, I fiddle around a little bit. Hey, let's make a joke. Hey, Mr. Joke Maker here. But I honestly don't understand what's the logic in trying to call ourselves green while encouraging production in dirty producing nations.
Yeah, I don't.
It makes no sense. It is. It feels like it's strictly for localized, you know, national, you know, a national localized, but it, yeah, it feels like just local optics. Local optics.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it, this was all crystallized for me after the botched retreat. I don't even know what to call it.
Yeah.
When we pulled troops out of Afghanistan,
mm-hmm,
and an off the record conversation that I had, and I can bring up parts of it now, but it was an off the record conversation that I had with somebody that could do something. I mean, it has some influence on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And basically said our troops should have stayed there until we finished mining the rare earth minerals that we need.
Oh. Yeah.
Because he doesn't want to do it here. He doesn't want to mine them here. So it's okay if we do things in other countries because it's ugly and dirty and we don't want to do it here. But let's do it in other countries and get what we need and
yeah,
get out.
Yep.
This whole... It is a fine example of we're just using other countries. And I know Venezuela wants to sell us more oil because they want the cash.
They need the money badly.
Iran wants to sell us more oil because they want the cash and they want to be able to say the U.S. is dependent on us for oil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, death to the infidels. But send us your cash. That is so bothersome. And what makes it, you've got the green argument on top of it, Davis, but we are turning to countries that we have talked about this before, we are turning to countries that want nothing but harm, mm-hmm, for each and every American, including my grandsons,
yep,
that are a year old. They want nothing but harm for my grandsons. And we are turning to them for oil when we could be just fine without it.
Mm-hmm.
All you got to do is lift some of the restrictions. And you know what? Do here what you're willing to do other places. It's just, Davis, I don't have an answer for you.
Well, a return to energy independence.
Yeah,
and it sounds like it oversimplifies the matter, but number one, this nation has proven that it's an achievable objective. Number two, it's a beneficial objective to the American consumer. We love our cars, we drive.
Yeah,
you know, it's one of those things. I would like to encourage this white hot romance by driving.
Yeah,
you know, a certain distance and having a date without having to pay. You know, I don't know what gas is right now at my local Quickstar, but I guarantee I get outside of the bubble of my local Quickstar and it's more than whatever it is here, you know?
Yeah. And one of the other headlines that I noticed when President Biden was at the podium was that freedom comes with a cost. Really? Hey, thank you. Mm-hmm. We've known that for generations, and if you don't respect that, you cannot respect what is happening around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we do respect that here. And here we are. We've been pulled into a situation by an unbelievably weak administration on foreign policy. And we've been sucked into this situation. And now it looks like there is a pathway for us to backstop jets from Poland into Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to pull us deep, deep into this conflict, whatever. and it does not feel good.
There's no telling where that goes.
No. Oh, Davis.
Because Putin's not going to let off the accelerator. I don't think he's going to. He's going to keep pushing.
I think so.
For whatever the opinion might be about what he's thinking, why he's thinking, his state of mind, any of that, it's conjecture is fun. He's going to keep pushing.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Thank you for listening today. Appreciate all of you. Keep praying for the people of Ukraine.
You're here.
Pray for smart decisions by our leaders, including President Biden.
Preach.
All right. Come back this afternoon, 2:06 Central. Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor, right here, AgriTalk.